Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 9th day of October, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Call. And as I suspect you've probably heard by now, the holiday weekend, the final weekend of Sukkot, was in fact, literally, one of biblical proportions. And I guess when it comes to just exactly how much so, we'll only be able to evaluate in hindsight. But here's the story as it has emerged by a Monday morning, early on Sabbath day in Israel. It's not only a Sabbath, but a high Sabbath called the Last Great Day. Hamas terrorists launched what we're told at least was a major surprise attack on Israel. They were caught completely off guard with their pants down, if we can believe that. The Islamist group fired over 5,000 missiles by Monday morning, the number's closer to 7,000, inside Israel, crossed into southern Israel, killed hundreds of people, including numbers of civilians, by land, sea, and air, then captured innocent civilians and Israeli soldiers as prisoners, took them back to the Gaza Strip, and launched numerous attacks all across southern Israel. And this, coincidentally, occurred just weeks after the Biden-Fuhrer on 9/11, if you recall, managed to give back $6 billion to Iran. Some said then it was almost certainly a mistake and it might end up with something almost exactly like this. And as Jim Hoff points out for the Gateway Pundit, the last time the U.S. gave vast stacks of money, literally pallets of $100 bills in one infamous case, over $1 billion to Iran during the first Obama regime years, Iran then proceeded to launch a massive military buildup. This time, people are asking the obvious question, just how many missiles can you buy for $6 billion? Looks like at least 7,000 or so. Plus, obviously, who knows how many mercenaries and suicide bombers.
In what was called an urgent and somber address to the nation, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel issued a stark warning to the Hamas terrorists and vowed to use, quote, all the strength of the Israeli Defense Forces to, quote, destroy Hamas's capabilities. And he warned that people in Gaza had better get out of there because, basically, they were going to level it. This morning, he said, on a Shabbat and a holiday, Hamas invaded Israeli territory and murdered innocent civilians, including children and the elderly. Hamas, he said, has started a brutal and evil war, and we will be victorious in this war despite an unbearable price. This is a very difficult day for all of us, and he pointed out that it was almost precisely 50 years to the day, well, at least the holiday fall feast season, since 1973's beginning of the Yom Kippur War. By Monday morning, Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant announced a complete siege on Gaza. The blockade includes a ban on the admission of food, water, electricity, and fuel, and the move is seen as the retaliation by Israel against Hamas following the largest attack on that country in decades. Again, since Yom Kippur 1973, Israel officially declared a state of war as of 6:30 a.m. local time on the Sabbath. And the IDF has instituted what they call Operation Swords of Iron to strike back at Hamas and protect Israeli citizens from further harm. On Sunday, the Israeli Air Force released footage of a strike against a compound belonging to the head of the intelligence department of the Hamas terrorist organization and said they continue to strike terror targets in the Gaza Strip. Quote, we're setting up a complete siege of Gaza, said Gallant in a video statement. No electricity, no food, no water, no gas. Everything is closed. We are fighting human animals, and we are acting accordingly. Also on Sunday, the puppet regime in Washington ordered the USS Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier strike group to move into the eastern Mediterranean in order to, allegedly at least, be closer to Israel, a sign that all the players are starting to move into position for this latest escalation in World War III. Hamas then said, moving the American aircraft carrier doesn't scare us, and the American administration, sick, must realize the consequences of this step. I have no doubt, folks, that they do. Meanwhile, and some analysts are calling this a flashing red sign, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday called for Israelis to leave Egypt as soon as possible. And Egypt, as you may recall, notes Hal Turner, was the first Arab nation to make peace with Israel, and depending upon what course they pursue in Gaza, including a possible ground invasion, peace with Egypt may now be in very real jeopardy. President Donald Trump over the weekend was among those who said in an official press release condemning the attacks and stating that Israel has every right to defend itself using overwhelming force, quote, we brought so much peace to the Middle East through the Abraham Accords, only to see Biden whittle it away at a far more rapid pace than anyone thought possible, he said, while crediting Biden for funding the terrorist attacks, and added, here we go again. Arguably, the other big development over the weekend was the fact that Hezbollah has not only indicated through at least some Arab sources that they were among those funding Hamas, and multiple sources say the support goes way beyond that, including logistics and planning and so forth,
And they, of course, are right there in bed with the Iranian regime. Looks like the Taliban, too, taking advantage of the billions of dollars of weapons, munition, armament, and even things like helicopters that the Biden Fuhrer left for them in Afghanistan, has requested permission to join the fray and deploy weapons that Biden gave them against Israel. The Jerusalem Post is among those reporting that the Taliban has requested free passage across Iran to assist Hamas in Gaza in the war against Israel. Remember, too, that of the 80-plus billion dollars that the Biden Fuhrer left for the friendly terrorists there in Afghanistan, a lot of it is not movable. Things like the Bagram Air Force Base, for example, are pretty well fixed in position. But that's not necessarily true for the billions upon billions of dollars worth of American military equipment and hardware that now may be deployed against what at least once upon a time might have been called an American ally. From there now, we need to turn to the elephant in the room. And I remember asking this question. It was probably the very first thing that came to my mind, folks, when I saw the reports of an amazing, unbelievable, who could have possibly imagined such a thing, surprise attack against one of the nations that has probably the best intelligence forces on the planet. How could they possibly be caught so blindly with their pants down? As a matter of fact, there were even stories that IDF had moved forces out of Gaza, leaving their own border almost unguarded, kind of like what the Biden regime's doing to America, and repositioned them elsewhere, just in time for the surprise sneak attack. How stupid do they really think we are? Which leads me to one of several stories on that particular issue. This one comes courtesy of the Armageddon Press and also the Burning Platform and others. One, it begins, would have to be almost hopelessly naive to buy the corporate state media line that the Hamas invasion on Saturday morning, the final day of Sukkot, was in fact an Israeli intelligence failure. Mossad is one of, if not the, most powerful intelligence agencies on planet Earth, and it routinely shares intelligence furthermore with the Five Eyes intelligence services to boot. It has tentacles deep inside every ally and foe of import. Its spies are littered across the Gaza Strip, which is an effective open-air prison into which goods do not flow but for the blessing of the Israeli state. And arguably, says the piece, the Gaza Strip is the most heavily surveilled geographic area on Earth. And we know that the Hamas invasion of southern Israel was an operation involving tens of thousands of operatives, at least, across land, sea, and air, using all manner of equipment and weaponry, drones, thousands of rockets, countless firearms, even bulldozers and anti-tank weapons, not to mention powered parachutes that were positioned to knock down Israeli fencing or fly right over it. And yet, MSNBC and the other criminally negligent networks would have you believe this was all just a great big intelligence failure by Mossad. Yeah, folks, really, it does kind of strain credulity. Bibi Netanyahu, though, notes the piece, was in real political trouble before this conveniently timed surprise invasion. Reminds me of Pearl Harbor, some might even suggest 9/11. Now, at least in this hope, Israelis will rally around the flag for some particular Palestinian ass-kicking, and their prime minister's eminently obvious corruption will, at least for a little while, be forgotten, if not forgiven. And does that sound familiar, too? Meanwhile, Israeli intelligence, rather than being punished for their failure, will use that so-called failure as a pretext to garner more funding and more authorities for itself so as to prevent any such similar failure in the future. And does that, too, folks, sound more than a bit familiar? On Saturday, Bibi even came basically right out and said, hey, folks, cooperate with the martial law we've got planned now. Almost like Israel's been watching what's going on in the corrupt, once-free United States. Says the piece here, the Hamas invasion was really only a failure if one believes the goal of Mossad is to protect Israeli civilians rather than accrue more power for itself. I can think of a three-letter American agency starting with C and ending with IA that arguably might have similar motives. At a bare minimum, Mossad knew of the attack, says the piece, beforehand, and let it happen for political convenience. More likely, in the view of the author here, is that it may have even actively facilitated the attack. And how's that for shocking, folks? But again, if we're paying attention, given what we've seen here, it shouldn't surprise anyone. Says the piece in conclusion, the same kind of person who might believe this was a big intelligence whoopsie are the same kind of idiots who might buy into the claim that a handful of semi-literate cave dwellers halfway around the world single-handedly pulled off the greatest terror attack in world history with no assistance from spooks and others who just mysteriously happened to find their passports, the only thing that survived the conflagration, and that buildings with structural fires at the top somehow mysteriously collapsed at free-fall acceleration right amazingly into their own footprints. From there, folks, I do have to digress, but only the tiniest bit, to this story out of the Daily Mail that I think was kind of interesting and certainly apropos. They're asking a question. Could it be that Kevin McCarthy, the recently expelled Rhino Speaker, just might be reinstated into that very same position? Loyalists, they claim, are floating the idea of drafting the ousted Rhino as the House remains paralyzed amid deadly Hamas attack on Israel. Oh, yeah, it looks like maybe Bibi isn't the only one who might profit politically from the dreaded fallout of the totally unexpected surprise terrorist attack. And notice, folks, you aren't hearing much about Hunter's hookers, are you? Or even Joe's little brother getting caught with his porno pants down. McCarthy, says Morgan Phillips for the Daily Mail, has not ruled out the idea, even though it sounded like he did, of being drafted back into House leadership. Quote, look, whatever the conference wants, I will do, he said bravely to host Hugh Hewitt on Monday morning. And now McCarthy loyalists that the piece here calls moderates, that's another name for rhinos, have begun to float the prospect because it looks unlikely that either of the two actual top candidates, whether it's Jim Jordan of Ohio or Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana, could get the magic 217 votes that they need on the first ballot to clinch the speakership. But now rhinos are pointing out the outbreak of war in Israel as evidence for the urgent need of real, meaning left-leaning sellout House leadership in this time of crisis. Until the Speaker debacle is ironed out, says the Daily Mail, from their vantage point across the pond, no legislation to support Israel and to help replenish its Iron Dome would be able to pass the House. And California Republican, sick John Duarte, insisted that leftist Democrats, too, should join in to help McCarthy be voted back into the speakership. And that's a scary likelihood, folks, that probably shouldn't be discounted. Tell me just exactly how surprised you really are. Israel has no greater friend than Kevin McCarthy, says the sellout from the People's Republic. And while we have one of our strongest allies in the world under attack, here we are dilly-dallying around with a leadership struggle in the House that should never have occurred, he said. And unfortunately, folks, we are out of time. At least I'm out of time at this point in order to get this show up before the deadline. So what I'm going to do, because I won't have time to finish it until later, is put up just a few of the remarks that I posted originally from the teaching on Sabbath day, immediately after the news had come out about all of this. So here's at least a bit of some of the things that I think were clear even then. The biggest in 50 years, again, almost to the day, sending fighters over the border from Gaza in the south, firing thousands. Matter of fact, the count I've seen, 5,000 or so rockets were fired, killing dozens. Actually, the last number I saw dozens dead, then 40 dead, and some reports now are saying as many as 200 dead. People were in critical condition. You know, in the fog of war, it's tough to know who's dead and who's just critically injured or who's going to die. But nevertheless, dozens, if not hundreds, have already been killed, and 800 or so early on were wounded. The number there is probably well over 1,000. Okay. In response, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered a call-up of reservists and said, and I'll come back to this with the full quote, we are at war. And the highlights, the barrage was sustained more than 5,000 rockets in a coordinated attack by land, sea, and air. According to the New York Times, Hamas assaulted from Gaza on southern Israel, and it's had few precedents for its like in history in terms of its complexity and scale. They invaded a number of Israeli towns, fired rockets toward cities as far away as Jerusalem. The airport in Tel Aviv International has been shut, and so forth. Again, early stores were asking what would be an obvious question. Dana Loesch was one of the first ones I saw. Did Biden fund this? $6 billion, people are saying, will buy a whole hell of a lot of rockets, and that's what we saw launched. Israeli military said at least 2,000 of those rockets had been fired into Israel by 11 a.m. on Saturday. Armed gunmen had crossed the border fence in a number of locations. They even had a fence, imagine that, along Israel's perimeter with Gaza. And essentially, others used paragliders, or what were called fan gliders, in at least one of the stories. Surprise attacks from all over the place. There's a list of the cities that were attacked and destroyed, and at least people were killed in Sderot, Kfar Atza, Nahal Oz, Magen, Be'eri, the military bases at Reim and Zikim, and so forth, the checkpoint at Eretz. Let's see here. The
country was caught off guard, it says, because this was a major holiday. Again, either a Simchat Torah, some stories, Shemini Atzeret, or the last great day of Sukkot. But just about all of those, including Benjamin Netanyahu, pointed out, it was 50 years ago, almost to the day. If you remember, the famous 1973 Yom Kippur War began, and of course, Yom Kippur, as we know, is 5 days plus the week that we've just finished prior to this. So not quite 2 weeks earlier during the fall feast, but still, most of the, both of the last two major attacks on Israel have been during the time of the fall feast. Hamas soldiers were parading what appeared to be dead military soldiers dragged through the streets, military vehicles and so forth. There were reports of civilians in some of these towns literally being killed behind the wheel of their car simply while they were driving. This is one of the statements that caught my eye, and I can't help but think, let's just say it's worthy of some prayer and continued thought, folks. This is Zero Hedge's summary. It is not immediately clear, they wrote, what prompted Hamas to launch the attacks, which would likely have required a significant amount, maybe months of planning. And guess what? You're going to hear all kinds of things, probably none of them true, at least not from the waste stream media. The leader of Hamas military wing, Mohammed Daif, announced the start of what he called Operation Al-Aqsa Storm. They want to take back the third holiest site. Well, they've already got a mosque there, but it is, in fact, the Temple Mount, so the holiest site in the religion that is based on the idea of the Torah. Said in Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in a televised address, declaring his mass army mobilization, quote, "We are at war, not an operation, not a round, but at war. The enemy," he said, "will pay an unprecedented price," adding that Israel would return fire of a magnitude that the enemy has not known. First task, he said, was to cleanse the area of enemy infiltrators. And I can't help but think that if America had half a brain, they would be doing the same thing when it comes to the invasion by a lot of reports now, 500,000 communist Chinese and other troops, including probably Hamas, but certainly ISIS. Biden gave him $80 or $90 billion worth of armaments. Wonder how much of that has crossed the southern border. Ultimately, folks, what we're seeing here is a pattern, and probably not an isolated incident. Let me read this note again from Yeshua. Remember, he said you'll hear wars and rumors of wars. These are the beginning of sorrows, the beginning of the things that are going to happen. So, with that in mind, let me read just a bit more of the warning here, and we'll kind of go full circle. Then we'll talk about some other things, because this is supposed to be a time of joy, and that's a question that I get frequently. How is it we can have joy when we recognize what a nasty position we're in, how evil the world is, and how completely, sadistically, satanically, psychotically out of control things are? Well, answer, he's just told us, look up. For your redemption draweth nigh. When we see these things happening, folks, as nasty as that is, it's an indication of, well, two things. One, the end is coming. And two, he warned us about it beforehand. If we did not have the faith to start preparing in advance, we had better get it now and realize, hey, this didn't happen by chance. We have been warned about this literally for 2,000 years. But certainly we have seen warnings over the last two decades that should have given us more than enough reason to say, hey, let's start getting ready. Okay, I mentioned we paused at the place where it says these are the days of vengeance, that all the things that have been written, and we can look at Isaiah, we can look at Daniel, we can look at any number of places in Scripture, Revelation. These things are being fulfilled. But woe to those who are pregnant, nursing babies in those days. There'll be great distress upon the land and wrath upon the people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword, be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles. Now that word in this case may actually be apropos. I'm sure Yeshua said by goyim, the nations, or the other peoples. But remember, the context of Gentiles, it implies a pagan understanding. And I guess in the world today, a pagan understanding is exactly what we need to recognize. These are pagans. Till the time of the pagans are fulfilled. And there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars and the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them from fear and the expectation of these things which are coming upon the earth. For the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now, when these things begin to happen, he says, look up, lift up your heads, because your redemption draweth near. And then he tells them a parable that I reference fairly frequently, and I think this one, too, of course, bears repeating at such a time as this. Look at the fig tree, he says. Matter of fact, all the trees. Because when they're already budding, you know for yourselves that summer is now near. So also, when you see these things happening, you know that the kingdom of Elohim, the Malkut HaShemayim, the kingdom of the heavens, too, is near. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all of these things, or till all things take place. Now, I hear this, and I hear the 70 AD crowd, the amillennialists, the preterists, all those that say, oh, it's all done, it's kind of pitiful, we didn't hardly notice it, and the millennial reign, that's come and gone too, and you weren't even here for it, sorry you missed it. That has always struck me as about as diminutive of scripture as you can get. That all of these things that he has prophesied could happen, and, it wasn't even worth a historical footnote. Oh, well, maybe the adversary expunged it. Well, really? He didn't expunge the parting of the Red Sea. He didn't expunge the deliverance from Egypt. Why was he able to expunge the second coming? Not buying it. Okay? However, I do think that this is interesting. I read it in this context as we're watching these things play out today, and I ask the question. Assuredly, I say to you, these are the words in red, this generation will by no means pass away till all things take place. Now, just exactly what does that mean, this generation? See, the preterist crowd will tell you, that would have been the ones that were listening to him then. I say, no, this generation could be those that are reading it now. And he just finished saying, look up. You'll see all these things happening. Here are the signs. His disciples ask him, what are the signs? Now, I don't doubt that there were some pretty nasty things that happened in 70 AD, and some of them saw that. But on the other hand, there's some pretty nasty things happening now. A lot of us are seeing those things. Who's he talking to? I say to you, this generation which sees these things, in the context, that's what it looks like to me, this generation which sees those things will by no means pass away till all things take place. Heaven and earth may pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. Remember, too, and I've mentioned this many, many times because he does again, Moshe calls Moses in chapter 30 of Deuteronomy, I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you. Yeshua calls the same two witnesses. And here he says, they won't pass away either. They may pass away eventually, right? But nothing is changing until then. But my words, he said, will never, by any means, pass away. So it all comes back to this, I think, consistent pattern in Scripture. His Torah is consistent. His Torah is for us. His instruction, in other words, is still for us today, has not been done away with. It provides answers, it provides blessings, it provides warnings for us. So let's see what we can learn. It's part of the reason why we walk in obedience to his appointed times, his fall feasts. And indeed, if we'd been paying attention, we might have suspected, and indeed many of us did, that something was likely to happen during the fall feasts. And here we are. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down and with carousing, drunkenness, and the cares of this life, and that day would come upon you unexpectedly. In other words, don't be caught, he says this in a number of different ways, as if by a thief in the night. You're supposed to know the times and the seasons. We just read that part about the fig tree. Be paying attention. It's part of the reason why I spend so much time talking about the things that he says to pay attention to. His times, his seasons, his word. Know what's going on. Do not be caught unawares. So all of these things are important. It will come as a snare on all of those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. That's an interesting turn of phrase. Who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Do we dwell here, or do we simply, are we sojourners here? Does seem to me like that's an important distinction. Elsewhere, he reminds us to be in the world, but not of the world.
And that'll do it for now. So may Yahuwah bless you and yours.